Welcome to Megaphone Podcast and Amplified Listening Project. This is KD and
Mark
coming to you from sunny Bozeman, Montana. Today we're going to talk about
the issue of Indigenous identity in the modern world with our friend Leo Davis. For a large part of last year, it felt like all eyes were on Standing Rock, a small reservation in so-called North Dakota, whose resistance to pipeline development on their traditional lands drew hundreds of other Indigenous nations from around the world. But what does it mean to be Native in the first place? Maybe you're listening to this today because you're non-Native and would like some insight into an unknown culture. Or maybe you're Native and struggling to understand identity in this highly colonized world. Well, today, Leo will share with us a deep understanding of his cultural background and history to explain why he thinks that Native identity is the biggest issue currently facing his community. We would like to take a moment to warn our listeners that there is the use of some profanity throughout our discussion. Thanks again for checking out Megaphone, and now, let's get on to the interview. To start, we'll have you introduce yourself, a little bit about just your background, what you think is important for people to know about you, first speaking on this issue in particular, and just in general, like what do you want the world to know about you, the community that you're a part of as well, and then what lenses you're perceiving the world through.
Okay, Kanatapi. Okay, Nisukwat. Hello, everybody. Hello, my relatives. Good to see you today. Nistu, Nitaniko, and Munisi. I let you know that, hello, I'm Leo, or Otter, the name that was given to me when I was younger, and before I was born, actually. I come from the Southern Pagan people, and I'm also a Lakota, you know. I'm also Lakota on my mom's side. I'm enrolled at Lower Brule, Kawich Asho Yate, in Lower Brule, South Dakota. So with that being said, man, I got a couple lenses to speak through. You know how they say Europeans here in America are Heinz 57? I'm kind of a Heinz 49, you know? I got a bunch of different little bands in me and stuff. So anyways, good to be here, and I thank you guys for allowing me to speak. A little bit about me, you guys asked. I went to school here at MSU, Bozeman. It feels good to be home in a valley of flowers. The band that I come from, we were once called this, they called the Scabby Ropes or Shabby Ropes. We protected this area. We roamed the Gallatin Valley, the Valley of Flowers, on down the Elk River, the Yellowstone River was our southern border. And we didn't spend too much time in one spot, so we couldn't tan our hides very good. So they called it Scabby Ropes or Poor Ropes. Well, when the smallpox epidemic came in with the fur traders, we kind of got diminished heavily. But this place here, has a special place to me. You know, my people's bones are here. My son was born here. So I met my wife. So I, you know, became a man, played college football. So this has always been a special place for me. So, outside of Bozeman, I grew up, in between Billings, went to school in Billings. But spent a lot of time in Northern Cheyenne country in Lame Deer. So I always joke around that Heinz 49 thing. My parents, my mom worked for IHS, my dad was teaching school part-time in Harlem up in Fort Belknap. So I tell people I was made in Belknap, I was born in Crow Agency, grew up in Lame Deer, but I'm Blackfeet, but I'm enrolled in at Lower Brule. So, you know, I have this whole, not total Indianness, I wouldn't call it. I'm not searching for that or claiming that. I just have a real human view of the world because I lived in the real, what Western society calls the real world, and I also walked that real human life too. You know, I grew up traditional, going to ceremony, going to culture, going to sweats, going to what we call our Okan, our big holy day, which is a predecessor to the Sundance. To us, everybody wants to believe they did the first things, but this is the ancient form of that tree ceremony, and that building that sun's lodge. And growing up, I didn't see it as so much as a privilege as I do now. I've seen it as a way of life, and I think that had a lot to do with my identification. You know, a lot of people look at me and they're like, oh, he's got to be Samoan, man. He played college football. He's got a beard, you know, slight kind of a beard. Maybe my real dad is Amish. Who knows? Just kidding. You know, I got the long curly hair. And when I tell them I'm Native American, a lot of people are like, they're taken back because I don't know. They're looking either for that noble savage, you know, that real rough looking Native guy who's ends up saving a bunch of, you know, poor people or something like, I don't know, that Hollywood term. Or they see me not as a radical, but all of a sudden, when I start spieling off about being how prideful I am in my culture, then they kind of view me, oh, this guy's kind of racist. And it's not that at all. Because I'm German. I'm proud of my German roots, my Welsh roots. My last name's Davis, you know. It means son of David. I come from Wales. and all those different things. I know who I am. And I think a lot of that has given me the perspective to be able to speak on a certain real world issue, you know, such as the Keystone XL pipeline or North Dakota Access. And even our tribal sovereignty rights that we're fighting every day. Water rights, you know, rights for clean air, you know, for healthy families.
All right, Leo. So you mentioned Keystone XL, Standing Rock, some of the pipelines going through. So from your perspective, what is the biggest issue facing your community right now?
My community, I guess, I've been here in Montana pretty much my whole life. I know I had the privilege of living in Hawaii and other places, but my community right now, the object at hand, the task at hand is pure cultural identification. And that means, who are we? What are we here for, right? See, in Western society, we get caught up in, no matter how we believe or what you believe, everybody's all about, man, there's a happier day tomorrow. We're working towards the afterlife tomorrow. And what about today? What are we going to do about it today? And that cultural identity for us, it was, we did everything today as best we could for tomorrow. So there would be a tomorrow, because everything was about survival. You know, we'd wake up on a spring morning like we have today. It kind of snowed a little bit, but it was time to get to work because that big snow was going to come a couple months later, a couple moon cycles later. And it was all a survival thing. It was all about doing the right here, right now. So for us to go back to that, I think that identification about who you are, what tribe you come from, you know, that hunger for language. I think a lot of our identity, a lot of our fight is internal. We're always battling. Who are we? You know, because in Western society, you got to go to school, you got to get a job, you got to pay bills. You know, all those monies, a lot of things that we buy and purchase is oil based and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So that, I feel like it's more of an internal conflict. I feel like we as a people need to educate ourselves on who we are, and that we come from this earth, and that we're not just some transcendent species. To quote Vindaloria, one of my favorite authors, you know, we have responsibilities to this earth, not only for ourselves, but for the next seven generations. And I think a lot of that comes with knowing who you are and where you come from. And when we do that, when we step back and kind of take a breath and realize, like, who am I? What makes me me? When I look in the mirror, what do I see? You know, and like I gave you all my little affiliations, man, I'm a breed. But when I look in the mirror, I see a Pakani man. I see, you know, a Lakota, Wichasha. I see somebody that's really working hard to be as best of a version of himself, man, a real human, right? No matter how you break it down, if you go back to anybody's ethnic group and what they say in their language, it means real person or the real language. And everyone says, I'm better because I'm white, or I'm better because I'm red, or I'm better because I'm black or yellow. I feel like Creator gave us those colors as an obstacle to, you know, that's that great deception. We're all the same on the inside. We all come from somewhere, but we all come from the land first, right? No matter what stories, you know, don't matter if it's the Bible, right? Adam came from earth, right? You look at our cultural stories, you know, someone came from this earth. Someone was made from the mud, the vein of this continent. And unfortunately, the Keystone Pipeline, man, all that stuff, what's the ground that we protect, what lies underneath of it is essentially that life force that they're trying to pull. And like I said, they wage war on us in the form of biological warfare, you know, smallpox. They wage war on our religion. They wage war on our identity. They do it every day. Look what's going on right now, man. There's a lot of native print galore being worn by everybody, you know? It's just one of those things. Now that I feel like it's a subconscious blow, right? We're working so hard to identify we are native, and pretty soon everybody's wearing native stuff, but they're not standing up with us. Like, that's kind of a mental screw with you, if you will. You know what I mean? And people don't understand that the higher ups, the people, powers that be, if you will, if there is a they, I know it's an internal conflict, but there is a they that want ultimately not just our demise here on this earth, but I feel like they want demise of most everybody so they can rule the minority that, you know, those billionaire guys. Mm-hmm. I feel like that. In my research, I was graduated here with a history degree, and so I'm always been into that alternative history, that alternative source. And I feel like they're trying to really weed out that consciousness, that belonging, yeah, and who you are and where you're from. And so our community is what I'm trying to get to, I guess, man. Our fight right now is fighting for who we are and what we stand for. You know, if you're Cheyenne, learn your Cheyenne language. Go to your Cheyenne ceremonies. If you're Blackfeet, do that way. You know, learn your way, right? Because each of those ways, they're all pieces to a big giant puzzle here. And let's say it's the continent of North America, right? We each got our own ways. We lay down that puzzle. That's that puzzle. If it's a map of the representation of the United States, there's that land. There's our connectedness. That's who we are. That's where we belong. And then we lay down over here. And as long as we start putting those puzzle pieces back together, I think we'll be in the right spot. Because we're so quick to co-sign this Indian way of life. But even that Indian way of life, there's stuff that people do in their ceremonies that's taboo to how I was raised. I wasn't given that way. I'm not supposed to practice that way. And there's a reason for that. And that's why our identification to our identity, ourselves, where we come from, is so imperative to our fight. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you fall down, slip on some ice, and you're with your three best friends. You know, it doesn't matter if one's Jesus or one's one of your Kolas on the Lakota side or one's a helper from my Blackfeet side. If I was to slip and fall, and I pray to him each and every day, if I slip and fall, one of them, they're all going to reach down at the same time and be like, oh, he's got it. Oh, no, he's got it, right? So it's the same context. When we gather together in prayer, I feel like we got to pray our own way. When we call too many things, it's kind of, we're trying to push 100 different things inside of a single frame door, and it takes a while. You know what I'm saying? If we really hone that one thing, that one thing, which is our spirit, our self, I think we'll be all right. Instead of trying to hone in on a whole bunch of different things, you know what I'm saying?
So we started with like kind of determining what this issue is,
right,
that we're talking about today, which is like Keystone XL on the smaller note, but on a bigger note is that like self-identification and just really being able to like own your ancestry and own your community, right, is kind of what I'm picking up on.
Yes, and the reason why is because if I was here to talk about the Keystone Pipeline, I'm giving it that power. It has no power over me, and it will not. And I don't want to give it that, right? I'm all about energies and different things like that. And when we harbor on the negative, it's kind of like gasoline, man. It takes one spark and kaboom, right? But the positive is like a bonfire. You're trying to start it without no kindling. But once that sucker catches, man, everybody comes to party. You know what I mean? Everybody.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm working for. I'm working on building that bonfire. You can use lighter fluid all day, but that's how I see it, you know?
Institutionally, what do you think we can do? Can we break down a system that's already broken? Well, it's not really broken. It's made to keep us oppressed. So how can we work within institutions like schools, government, military, industrial complex to break down what's going on?
It goes back to not knowing who we are. We need to become self-sufficient. We need to bring something to the table. So when we go to litigations, we have that financial backing. I know not everything's about money, but heck, man, we make our own currency. We're a sovereign nation. You know, the military-industrial complex, our people serve at a higher rate per capita than anybody else. We have soldiers. And we have some damn good ones, too. I'm proud of all my family that served. Even at times, you know, when... This is how fucked up America is. All right, so my grandfather, Carl Schelt, he went and fought World War I. Yeah, his last name is Schelt. The guy's darker than Ace of Spades. Yeah, he's got a German last name, but America made him change his last name to White because they're worried about him switching sides over there against the Germans. But it's, you know, that mental fuck, you know, and I'll quit with the cuss words because I'm working on it still. Just kidding. But no, that's just what it is, man. And that goes back to identification. Who are we? What do we belong to? You know, that's what it comes down to. And I feel like to work within institutions, we gotta have that real education. We gotta call a spade a spade. We gotta let people know there's more than four stories to one point of view in the world of history. Right? We gotta take back our not only our identification, our culture, our language, our songs, but we need to take back our bodies. We need to be careful what we put into it. And that's why I'm so heavily involved with Kangen Isogenics. We can't have, a spirit can't thrive in a horrible temple. You know what I mean? There's no ceremony without a lodge. And if your lodge is shitty, you're not going to have a ceremony. And so that's what it really goes back into that honing who you are and where you come from. Our people didn't eat a bunch of junk. We weren't junk food junkies, man. You know, I don't care if you claim that Indian way of life, then try to really walk it and try to really be about it, not so much talk about it. And I think that's really that whole, again, that identification goes back down to. And working in institutions, if something's wrong, I used to argue with my teachers, tell my dad how to come. You know, let my teachers know, this is the story we grew up hearing. You know, and that's what made me want to be a history teacher. Well, the more history I did research on, you know, there's no job for real history. You know, it's such a, we're given such a view of America to feel so proud of this country, but the more and more I learn about it, the less and less proud I am to be American. I'm proud to be American Indian. I'm proud of the Americans that side with us and want this country to be the land of the free, the home of the brave. But we were free and brave long before that. We didn't have no red, white, and blue flags. We didn't need that. We didn't need to pledge allegiance to nobody but our people, all for one, one for all. We pledged allegiance to our God. That was it. Our God and our people, man. That's all you need. Then you throw in, you know, then you try to say, oh, now you need to have this money. You know, I think we need to go back. We need to put our foot down and say, okay, well, even if we don't want to do currency, go back to the old way of living. I have a need, or I have a good, you have a need. What can we trade for that? What can we do? How can we work out a deal? We're tax exempt anyway on reservations. What can we do to help ourselves? And then pretty soon we can start doing this for people outside our own. And then we start making our kickback because they do that to us. You know, they dig an oil well or find natural gas on our land. They give us a little percentage and say, here you go. Here's a couple hundred thousand or here's some big bucks you've never seen before. And they bite. Why can't we do that to them? Why can't we start two evils don't make wrong or right, you know what I mean? But I'm saying we can start doing that ourselves. We can start owning, like, tourism.
Have you ever been down to, like, Miccosukee area, like, with Seminoles? No, I
never have.
They have a gated community.
Yeah.
A gated community. They're one of the wealthiest tribes. And, you know, going to school there, I had a lot of friends and would go there. And we were just down there visiting one of my friends. And yeah, they straight up have like a country club gated community. That's their res.
Yeah.
So you go there and it's unlike any other, like people think about res life. Like it's like you need a card to get into a gated community and it's a beautiful.
You need to be on a guest list.
Yeah. It's so just interesting to see the scope of Native people, like, you know, like what some choose to do, what others choose to do. And I know there's like, you know, some conflict and people think of it differently, but it's completely doable. I think that's like one of the situations where owning all of those casinos, they're getting a big kickback and, you know, taking care of their people.
So. Well, yeah, and it's even to a point where we were talking to our friend down there in Florida and she was like, yeah, you know, it's interesting because you talk to people around here about quote unquote res Indians and they're like, they live in a gated community. Like, why do they need any help?
Right?
But then you live out in the West and you talk about res Indians and you're thinking about like Standing Rock or Blackfeet or, you know, down in like Pine Ridge and like some of the most impoverished parts of the Western Hemisphere are on reservations around, you know, this continent. And so that's a really interesting like juxtaposition to try to deal with when like we're all on this journey for self-determination and to figure out what Native identity is in this culture and in this world right now. But then we're also trying to battle those outside perceptions.
Going back to the casinos, you know, I works great in a state in which you can't go to Town Pump down here on 7th and put $5 in a Lucky Lil's machine, right? So you gotta pick and choose what's gonna work, right? And it all goes back into that self-identification. What do we have as a resource right now that we can preserve the land, increase our people as far as their health, their wealth? Cause that's what it comes back down to. We gotta remember the identification of who we are and what we stood for. When you became a leader amongst our people, you didn't stand in front of everybody. You stood to the back. You fed the hungry, clothed the naked, right? You made sure the women, the old women and children had everything first, all right? Then you even conducted yourself in such a way as you were humble, right? And I think that's what we miss. Again, it goes back to that self-identification. And to be able to do something like that, wind farms, we could do that easy without hurting our land. To some degree, I know we got to dig and do all that kind of stuff, but at least then we know where to put it. We know where our people are buried. We know exactly what to do and how to do it. We have my brother, man. He's a biological chemical engineer, graduated summa cum laude from Montana State University. I mean, we have the resources. You know, we have some of the smartest, brightest individuals on, in America with our DNA running through them. And I think if we tap into those resources and figure out, okay, what can we offer? What can we do? Who knows? Maybe one day we have our own currency within Indian country. That's only good on Indian land.
So I want to talk about privilege now, because obviously us sitting around here, we have the privilege to do that. And we have the privilege to have the education to be having these discussions. So with those resources and meeting people where they're at, how do you think we get everyone to the table to talk to each other and get on the same page and do something for good?
Oof, that's, you know, I think it comes down between rights and privileges. You know, within our culture, we have a privilege, and that's life. But our right to this earth is our God-given right, and that's to really put our foot down and say enough is enough. And we also have rights that were earned, you know, through our societies. Growing up, there's certain things I can and cannot do. So again, it's that networking, it's that understanding, but it's that respect, not only for what you're trying to do, but the people you're trying to get to the table. You got to meet them halfway. See, our people were so quick to diminish somebody. Oh man, he's wearing a Redskins hat. That guy's not with us, you know? Or that guy, man, you know, there's a lot of Indians that didn't support AIM. You know, there was a lot of people on the res that knew their ways that were like, hey, who are these guys and what are they doing? You know, there's, you go to some reservations and some of those old women still call them assholes and moxins. You know, it's true. It is. And I just heard it from the horse's mouth. That's the only reason why I'm relaying it. I appreciate what AIM did. Free Leonard, you know. So it's one of those things that, gosh, how do we get everybody to the table? I think we just got to put aside our differences, even as Native people. I mean, we're so quick to write off breeds or who's a full blood and who's this and that, what tribe you are. I think first we just got to realize, one, okay, we know who we are now. Right? It goes back to that identification. Okay, we identify. We know who you are. We know our songs. We know our ways. Okay, now I feel comfortable being able to sit in a room with other people who know about themselves. Because right now in this world, there's people who know about themselves. And I can tell you right now, knowing my history, knowing my culture, it used to make me very uncomfortable to sit in a white history class about Montana history. It made me uncomfortable because I felt like it was my privilege, not my privilege, but it was my right as a Native person to set the record straight. Because if I don't, who will? Right? And if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So we got to remember that as well. If we're not working together coercively as a unit, we are as much as a problem as we are trying to be a solution. And I think to get everybody to the table, I don't know. I'm going to have to pray on that. Because that's such a broad question. That's such a great point you brought up. But for me, you know, I can only speak for me, myself, and my son, because he can't speak right now. I think, honestly, we just need to be comfortable in our own skin. And we're not. And I'll say it again, we're not. Because when shit hit the fan in Standing Rock, people were, you know, starting to point fingers instead of, come on, we still need you. You know, there was a lot of, we don't need your prayers, we need you here. And, you know, it just didn't seem like it was that good heart fight again. You know, that the word, like our women started back in Labor Day.
Getting into like privilege and identity, I'm curious, kind of on a broader scale, do you see any commonalities or intersections between your experience as a Native person and maybe other like people of color, immigrant folks who are coming to the United States who kind of have to sacrifice their identity in order to gain the privilege that you get in this country? Or in other ways, do you see any like major commonalities there where you think we could bring together more communities and more people in these types of discussions?
What I would call that is just colonization. So how do you fight that colonization that's happening institutionally? How do you fight it when it's happening internally? You know, like the term whitewashing, let's like quote unquote, you know.
Yeah.
Like for me growing up, I was called slurs all the time in school and, you know, how, like, trying to be proud of my identity and my culture, but then going to school, learning from a textbook that doesn't tell me about my history, and then going back home and trying to, like, figure out what's okay and what's not okay when you're being told two opposite things, one by society and then one by your parents and what you're experiencing at home.
You know, I'm gonna quote my good friend Josh Morey. He runs the Pakai Academy in Hawaii, and he's a very proud Hawaiian. He's doing his, bringing his people back to working the land, farming, because that's what they're known for. Fishing, you know. He's also training kids. That whole thing, got to have a healthy temple in order to house our healthy spirit. What we need to start doing, I believe, in that context of what you're saying, it's easy to be a proud Native American and a bunch of white people. It's easy to do that. Because I felt like I had to put on that not mask, but I had to put on that paint in front of them my whole life. I had to defend who I was all the time. I always had to prove how Indian I was. Not in my resi sense. Oh, this guy can drink so much. This guy can break into a car. You know, they always say that Leo can get in a car. I'm like, yeah, it's not because I'm Indian, though. You know, it's because I got a brother who's very forgetful and I had to get in a car a whole bunch of times, all right? It's just something you learn. Those type of things. And just joking around as far as that context, but still, subconsciously, they're really testing you. They really want to know how authentic you are. And we as a people, we as minorities, we have to prove how minority we are, not only to ourselves, to our families, but also to the country. And to quote him directly, Josh Moran, he says, easy to be a proud Hawaiian in Montana. But back in Hawaii, it's that crabs in a bucket thing. Again, we got to be comfortable on who we are. When someone's really want to know who they are and they're speaking their language and they're going to ceremony and learning their songs, yeah, they didn't grow up that way, but they're learning who they are, we can't say, ah, who's this guy? No, we got to embrace them, bring them in. That's one of our own. We got to see a brother in a brother. We can no longer see friends amongst our brothers. We got to see family. And I think that's what you're getting to, is we got to be able to do that. And we got to be able to create our own institutions. I think our language revitalization schools, that's a great step forward. Now, where do we go from there? How do we institute that language into our identity to who we are in this modern world, right? Our language is very fluid. It has adapted. It had to have been, right, to get to where it's at now. So our identity needs to be able to ebb and flow, but it doesn't change course. See what I'm saying? It's got to be able to move. It's got to be like the wind. We got to be able to embrace the power of the wind, because if we don't, man, it's going to blow us over. But when we let it pass through us a couple times and harness that and know that it's okay, then you can walk through a storm, right? Kind of letting the rain roll off your back. Same idea. And I think we as people, we got to put it aside. We got to accept each and every one of us, right? So like getting back to the Keystone Pipeline, perfect example. We as Native Americans in Montana, Alberta, South Dakota, North Dakota, you know, Nebraska, there's a few of them that are in Colorado, Oklahoma. We got to link up and join hands with our black community down in Port Arthur, Texas, right? PAT, home of EGK, rest in peace, PMC. It's the Port Arthur town itself has a 60,000 populace, but it's got a 43% black population. That's a lot more than I can say about Native American populations in an urban setting in Montana or North Dakota, right? So, you know, pun intended, but we've been in the same boat since 1492. Let's face it. We need to link arms. We got to quit putting us, we got to put aside our own racial diversities within ourselves. Now look at our Hispanic folks down there, our Mexican folk, right? They probably go through the same stuff we do here. With us speaking English is no different than them speaking Spanish. It's a white man's language. I got in fights in a high school town, a kid that he actually, you know, wanted to pull a gun on me. But, cause he was, you know, going off in Spanish. I'm like, man, that's no different than me speaking English, man. What's your language? Who are you? Cause I told him, I was like, you know, a dark Mexican is Indian, but not every Indian is a Mexican. We're American. You're Mexican, but it's just the border. It's the context. We're still the same people. Deep down at our roots, we are red. And I think that's where it comes back to, that self-identification. And so if we can link arms with them, man, let's, you know, if you want to talk countries about countries, Texas is a stolen country. They stole it from the Mexicans. California is stolen, right? But who did Spain steal it for before then? Who did Mexico steal it from, right? The core context, it's the people that were there, the indigenous people. And you look anywhere else in this world, they wipe out indigenous genocide. That's what it's about. I think we should call it indigenous side, not genocide, because, you know, that's how you can lump in different subgroups, right? Like the Jews, they're not really a race, they're a faith. That's where that genocide comes from. What happened to us? They preemptively and wanted to rid our seed from this earth, not our faith and how we believe. They wanted to erase our bloodline, our DNA, because what we carry and how connected we are to this land. And so that's what I mean. They should call it something else. They're in genocide. But I think our genocide right now is self-inflicted, because it's internal conflict. Yes, there's an oppressor. Yes, it's they. But who's the oppressor now? It's ourselves. Because we lost our identification, right? That's why. America can step back and be like, we'll just sit back and watch the show. Pass me my popcorn made out of my plastic bucket that I just got from oil on their land because they're not smart enough to get it together as a people. And I'm not saying, I'm not hating guys. Don't get me wrong. I love my people, but it is what it is, man. I got called a white Indian all my life because I played basketball for a double A school. Why? Because what was going on there is, man, my dad didn't want me growing up putting a needle in my arm and seeing that every day. Cause it happens, right? Just like the crack communities and, you know, the black communities and Hispanic communities at LA and Phoenix and different, you know, suburban areas like that where they want that to happen. Our pressure wants it to happen because it's self-inflicted at that point, right? My dad wanted to remove us from that, keep us holy in his lodge and know who we are. Right? But then again, in a reservation for me, I just look at it as a barbed wire compound. Me, our people, shoot, man, I'm home. I'm not on a res, I'm home. Right? I can go anywhere in Canada. I can go to anywhere on the western slope of the Great Divide all the way to, you know, north the headwaters where they meet the Yellowstone and the Missouri confine as a Blackfeet. Down the Yellowstone all the way to North Saskatchewan River. That's home for me. That was our traditional homeland. That was our hunting land. You know, that's where we, the Blackfeet Confederacy, you know, the Kainai, the Siksikai, and also the Pukani, that was our home, right? Now I'm also Lakota. And then I also got Siwash Band Colville from Washington. So, like, I can go anywhere in the Pacific Northwest and the Midwest. I feel at home. I don't have to step on side. Welcome to Pine Ridge. Welcome to Lord Brule. Welcome to Crow Reservation. Thank you for visiting. Come again soon. You know, I don't need that to have that identity. What we need to do is identify ourselves as individuals. We don't, you know, we get caught up even amongst ourselves. Who's res and who's not? You know, you look at it, for example, where my wife comes from in Crow. There's a border town, okay, named Hardin, and they have a basketball team. Yeah, they might have an Indian head coach, might have a team full of Indians, but it's still a white school. It's not on the reservation, right? So, again, matching the argument with the rhetoric, when they play Lodgegrass, the tribe's divided. They're one people. Right? That's just in that context. That gets to show you that we have a long way to go yet before we can have a seat at the table across from Trump and be like, damn it, this is what we want and this is what we deserve. Until that happens, I don't foresee anything happening because they're going to look at us and be like, okay, well, I know what you want, but homie over here, who I like, this Indian over here, he thinks like me, so we're going to go with what he says on behalf of all you. Now, if we have the identity, that cultural identity, who we are, I think we remove a lot of those external factors. We remove political ties, right? We remove affiliations outside of being a real human. Does that make sense? Oh, this guy's a rancher. Oh, this guy's a farmer. This guy took more cubic feet of water last year than I got. You know, I don't like him now. You know, those kind of things, man. We got to quit being crabs in a bucket. And I think that's one thing. That was my fight all my life. I was trying to get rid of that, man. It didn't matter if who you were. My house, man, me and my friends, I grew up around a lot of different people. Some of my best friends, actually, a lot of my groomsmen, majority came from a black community. Well, I grew up in an urban setting, and we just felt connected, you know? And the ironic thing about that, two of my groomsmen, you know, they were from a black community, but grew up on the res, right? So they had that reverse perspective of what I see, and they understood my calling, my fight, and I understand where they come from, right? Their dad's black, their mom's white. I couldn't imagine how those family reunions go. You know, let's cut it how it is, man. It's, you know, I got white blood in me, but this is from the 1800s. You know, this is from cattle drives. And I'm actually on my mom's side from the Meriwether Lewis or the Lewis and Clark expedition, right? My grandfather was the one that stopped them on the Missouri River. Yeah. So I this fight, this connectedness to this land, this who are they and what are they doing in my country? It's been there since the first, you know? And that identification, even when I see that, I'm part white, but guess what? Those white men that took in these Native women did it at a time where it wasn't even kosher. And guess what? They even had Indian names. They sat at ceremony. They were able to put up lodges. They had an esteemed place amongst our camp, amongst our people. They were real humans. It wasn't a race thing, right? Now that goes back to that identity. We didn't see race. We saw, okay, this person has what it takes to make this world a better place for the next generation. And he has done good deeds and brought good luck and good fortune to his family. right? It had nothing to do with how much he's worth. How much of a value of a human being does he have? That's what ranks you amongst our people. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. Yeah, there's probably things, you know, there was classes. There was the poor. There was those less fortunate. Life is life. But we as a people have that responsibility, that right. Not only the right, but also the privilege to take care of our own. See, America doesn't take care of its own. We have that privilege to be able to do that. Start doing that now. My observation of oppression comes from, you know, my dad, my father. I'm not talking my grandpa or my great-grandpa. My dad was forced to go to boarding school. My dad ran away from boarding school and got whipped. He tells me horror stories about boarding school. But on the flip side of that, because of how he grew up, there's also that fear to government, that fear of this and that. And he's like, you know what? Well, boarding school taught me a lot of good things. Well, I get it. He also teaches me that the glass is always half full. Don't harbor on that negative energy, right? But he's also telling me, Leo, I think I need some help. I need to talk about this. This is not right. You know, I'm one generation removed from that. And he took care of my grandma. My grandma Marion Grounds. She's from the Buffalo days. She died over 110 years old in the mid-90s. She lived a long life. And who her husband was, my grandpa, Pitonista, John Brown, he was an older man when he took her as a wife when she was a little girl. So there's that connectedness even further. He was at Baker's Massacre. And for me, that's only because my dad took care of my grandma in that such a way. I'm really, to me, theoretically, and also just personally, I'm only two generations separated from that fight. And I always felt like I was born a couple hundred years too late, or even a couple centuries, man, because I come from a ranching family. And there's no more reward in this life than a hard day's work for the betterment of your environment, right? The betterment of something else, taking care of something else, be able to feed your family. There's nothing wrong with that, you know? And so I've always had that pull, I guess you could say, about seeing really who the oppressor was and where we're coming from. And then finally just kind of aha, it's self-inflicted at this point, right? Because we're able to practice our culture and our language for the most part without having any say from the church or from the BIA. You know, so right now, those that don't go to ceremony are other than saying they don't do it right. You don't go there. You go to ceremony? What? Jesus is the way. I believe God is God. I believe there's different ways for us to take good in all things and push forward. But again, that comes with that identity. And that comes with knowing that we are now our own oppressor.
I'm really curious what your ideas are behind non-Native people becoming involved when there are these like Native-led initiatives and projects and just on-the-ground movements.
Oh, yeah.
What does it take for a non-Native person to come into that community and do it in a respectful, humble manner that doesn't lead to problems?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're at the age and time right now. We're doing it right here. We got our own voice. We don't need that token white person. I'm going to call it what it is. We're token Indians, man. Being in an urban environment, being a big friendly guy out there in the community, everybody probably views me as a little token Indian. But I'm really not. I just speak how I am. I always walk as true to myself as I can be. Now, with that being said, we need our own voice. We don't need some white person from Hollywood or somebody come co-sign us and speak for us. Give us the mic and back us the fuck up when shit hits the fan. Stand right here beside me as my homie. And when shit really gets brutal and we get to throwing cuffs, I don't want to see you back there with the mic being, guys, we shouldn't be doing it. I want you throwing blows with me. I don't need you speaking for me. And that's what it's going to come down to. I love it. I love the support. Okay. There's a lot of people out there that are always saying, I'm so sorry for what we did to your people. And you didn't do shit to my people. I'm still here. To what you did to some of my relatives and, you know, the people. Yes. But my people? No. Cause I'm still living and breathing. Same reason why I can't get pissed off about Redskins, right? It wasn't my grandpa that got scalped. Same idea, right? Don't apologize to me if you want to make something right. Just stand by me. When shit hits the fan, I want you right there. I don't need you to speak for me. I don't need you to dress up in a ribbon skirt and start smudging off with, you know, sage.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Catholic, be Catholic. Sit there and pray the rosaries. Why smudge? You know, if you're there, you're Baptist, start reading, you know, the book of Luke and going off and doing your thing, man. Be you. Don't become one of us now. It's too late for that. We could have used that back when we were getting diminished, right? We could have used that back and then to become part of us. We could have used that extra blood, right? Carry on our idea. It's not our blood, our DNA, our blood quantum. It's the idea that real human. But now it's kind of, we're past that now. Join the fight and stay in the fight. Don't just come to show up and get a Facebook like.
When movements get large enough to where you get people from all walks of life coming, how do you welcome them in a way that isn't detrimental to the movement?
That's a good question. And I think, again, got to know who you are, man. Got to know your place. One, when a lot of times, you know, I heard in ceremony that they always say these ways aren't to be played with. Imitation is the biggest form of flattery, but him up there, he don't like imitation. He likes the real deal. And it goes back to the same thing about being Indian. We don't like that imitation. Same thing with cultural appropriation. Why? Because it's imitation. We want the real deal. So if you're going to be a real human, come show up. If you're not one of us, listen. We're going to tell you what to do. This is our fight. And when I say our fight, I mean us Indian people, us Native people. It's not your fight too. I know you're do-gooder. I know you want to do some great things for us, and we appreciate that. But fight, help support us in our area of fighting. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, if we're calling prayerful protest, come pray your way. I got my pipe. I got my way. Let me carry this. This is my cross to bear, huh? This is my way of life. This is how I'm going to live and die. You have yours. And I think that education, that understanding, but also too, we just got to shake our head sometimes, smile, and just say, you know what? They're the ones that got to meet the maker at the end of the day. And you know what I mean? Yeah. They're the ones that got to live with it. And that's a tough question to answer because, man, I could only see that happening. I kind of laugh because, you know, same thing happens sometimes at ceremony. And ignorance is bliss, but I feel like if you're going to be involved in something like that, you should be highly, a little bit more educated, you know, kind of get the know-how, get the feel of the people. Bring your own food. Just kidding. Yeah. Just teasing. No, that's a tough one. That's a great question. There's a lot of great questions that I want to answer as a man sometimes, but damn it, we don't need them. But, you know, as the person I am and how I'm very inclusive, I like to see the good in everybody. I feel like we just got to give them the benefit of the doubt, but we got to educate them. We got to be able to stand firm and know who we are and be like, hey, smite their hand. You don't do that, goddammit. You hear me? You do not do that. We gotta be better at setting boundaries. Cause I feel like we as Native people, we don't do that very well. Personal boundaries. We don't. You know, look at our relationships, man. There's so many toxic, controlling relationships. You look on the res, don't matter if it's father, son, mother, daughter, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, boyfriend. Very toxic. And I think when we set boundaries, again, goes back to know who you are, setting those boundaries. We can start doing it as a people because we really need to do set boundaries. We need to let people know, okay, yeah, you're Steve Daines. Don't ask to dance grand entry at our powwow, you motherfucker. You know, just like, don't be stupid. You don't stand for us. Why the hell are you gonna? We're not gonna co-sign you now. And even though it's a powwow, it's a social gathering, it don't mean shit. You know, it's don't come to our ceremonies, you know. It's like, well, we got to start setting boundaries. Like, no, you're not welcome here. We got to start doing that. And not in the context of being racist or anything like that, but there's a time and a place. You don't have those. You have the privilege to be here, but you don't have the right to be inclusive in this society right now because we've earned this. We've studied this. We've been taught this. We've fought for this. Unfortunately, you don't have that right. I can't go to a church and start handing out communion. I don't have that right. I can't go start arresting people on the streets because I see them talking and driving on their cell phone and, you know, doing drugs. I don't have that right. I don't have that badge, right?
When it comes to something like we have the right to protect our land and we were the first people on our land, but we literally don't have that right now because, you know, we have people like the federal government sending in troops, you know, to Standing Rock, and like when that right is taken away from us, what do we do to preserve it?
I think that's where that comes into our cultural identity. I think that's where we stand up and say, no matter what, I'm gonna die for my beliefs. I don't think we have enough strong enough people for that yet. It's easy to say that on a mic, man, but when you stand on the other end of that barrel, we'll see. Me, I have no qualms about if I die today or die tomorrow, man. I try to live as happy as I can. Am I scared? Yeah, because I don't know if I'm going to make it on my journey. There's a bunch of stuff I haven't done on here on this earth that probably looks good on him up there. But, you know, that's one of those things. And we got to be willing to die and sacrifice for who we are. And if that means that they get rid of reservations, so what? So be it. We're willing to sacrifice that because we know who we are. We don't need a reservation. Like I said earlier, I'm home, man. I ain't on no res. You know, I'm home. I feel like we really got to be willing to lose more before we can start gaining, I feel like. Because when we start gripping onto things, man, we're holding on to that westernization, that colonization. We need to let go. We need to let go of that stuff.
Being an urban indigenous person and dealing with that identity, and like, where do you draw the line when it comes to things like capitalism, having a job, you know, juggling all of these western things that come into your way?
That line for me, again, being an indigenous person here in an urban environment, I look at my job, my first and foremost, when you know who you are, you know what your responsibilities are. We feed our children, we take care of our women, we take care of, I'm speaking as a man, totally a heterosexual man, you know what I mean? We take care of our women, we look out for others. Our job, I look at it as a buffalo hunt, huh? And, you know, a buffalo hunt was a very scary deal, you know, back in the day. We had to, there's a lot of dangers. Actually, a lot of people, we had more casualties in buffalo hunts usually than we did going to battles, right? Because when we go on raids, it's usually, you know, steal horses, count coup. It wasn't always, you know, go kill an enemy. And therefore, hunting was a dangerous deal, right? Just like jobs, it can be very dangerous. You can get into a job where you're just 40 hours, you're in and out, 8 to 5, you're done. Or you can get stuck in a salaried position, and next thing you know, you're a slave to that job. As an indigenous person, this is what I look at. I look at it as I'm taking care of my wife and my son, first and foremost. And if I don't do that, who will? I'm not going to rely on the government, being it, because I'm an urban indigenous person. I don't want any association with the government. I want to be as off-grid as possible. Now, we got to draw that line, being indigenous and being urban, is where do we draw the line saying, all right, this is what I really need to survive. And all this other shit is just stuff I want. Because we weren't materialistic. We only kept enough. You know, I don't know if you've been inside of an 18-foot lodge, but there's not a whole lot of place to put something. On top of beds, your bundle, your pipe, you know. It comes down, you got to draw that line. What do we need versus what do we want? And that's where I think for us to draw that line, it's how much Indian do you really think you are? And, all right, so all that money, that's great, you got it, but what are you going to do with it now? Are you going to send it off when people really need it? Are you, I mean, cause you struggle. I, that's hard to make ends meet, man, especially in Bozeman. Let's face it. You got two separate classes. You got a working college based, almost a low class, and you got a really esteemed higher upper class, man. You only have farmers and ranchers here no more. I don't know about you, but 19th, that was all farmland when I was a kid. You know, my aunts and uncles were going to school here, and you know, college on the other end, going towards the mall's dirt road, you know? And so for me, I guess where I draw that line is, you know, what do I want and what do I really need to survive in this world, right? Because all that other money that I save up is for when I need to go on a trip, to, you know, take a week's worth of work off and go to ceremony, you know? That's where it comes down to. That's where I use some of my funds. But that's where I also get into now on my urban side. I'm getting into that multi-level marketing. I want to build my own dreams. I want to be able to be my own boss. As long as I'm signing my own checks, can't nobody tell me to be in at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then you got a half hour lunch, Mr. Davis. No, I don't. I'll take my lunch when I'm hungry, and I'll take as long as lunch as I want, you know? So that line for me, I guess, is drawn again, that what you see fit, how much you see yourself being the need versus the want. I think that's the best way I can answer that question.
That's it for today's show. A big thanks to Leo Davis for taking time to talk with us, as well as KGVM, a new community radio station in Bozeman, Montana, for providing material support for this podcast. Here at Megaphone, we care about what's going on in our community and yours. If you've been facing an issue that you think needs more attention, feel free to find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at MegaphoneLP, or send us an email at megaphonepodcast@gmail.com. Until we can get up and running on the formal podcast end of things, you can find us at kgvm.org. Our intro song is a derivative of Tech Toys by Lee Rosevere, available under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Megaphone Podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by KD Segura and myself, Mark Chavez. Until next time, don't forget, we hear you.